Can I get a meow?
Meow.
Meow.
Meow. Meow.
Meow.
Meow.
Meow.
Meow.
Meow. Meow. Meow. Meow. Meow. Meow. Meow. Meow. Meow. Yeah. Coins in the kingdom. Freedom Fiends. Freedom Fiends, I'm sitting here in the windowless bunker surrounded by bears, suffering from bear madness today. That's a new thing. We're watching Hell on Wheels, and one of the characters gets attacked by a bear and gets a bear tooth in his head and gets nursed back to health by Native Americans and then ends up with bear madness and ends up getting shot and killed for it by his friend. Mm-hmm. So watch out for bear madness, people.
Wow, yeah.
I happen to watch this show. Thank you very much, Michael Dean.
Yeah. Do you have bear madness?
I haven't seen that episode yet, so you've totally spoiled that for me.
Oh. Well,
I haven't started watching
it. Yeah, I kind of figured with episodic media, you know, if you're a season behind, there's really no spoilers. But, okay, I should have just said some show. I didn't know people watched that. I didn't know that something on TV would be popular. All right, so I'm sitting here in Wyoming, the land of bears, and the real fiends are having the real fun. At Disney World, at Coins in the Kingdom, which is a Bitcoin event at Disney World, and we have Diana Kyler, the Laughing Kitty. Are you there?
Meow.
Meow. And we have Dobby Barker, the Shiny Badger. And
Sadly, he cannot hear.
Okay, just poke him.
Moment,
just poke him. He's
I've
got
been instructed to speak. I don't know what I'm supposed to speak about.
And we've got Ian.
Hello, universe. This is Dobby Barker in Orlando, Florida.
And we've got.
And, I'm having a great time, and I don't know who I'm talking to. But
and we have
Michael,
Ian,
how's it going?
Good. And we have Ian Freeman, the flashback ferret. Are you safe? Have you been contacted
okay
by
so
the government?
All right. I haven't been arrested yet in Orlando.
That's your wrestling name. I didn't realize that,
the
Ian.
The flashback ferret, yeah.
That's pretty cool. I like that.
So someone who has headphones and can hear me, because they're sharing resources there. Yes. They're spreading the wealth of limited headphones. Tell me what Coins in the Kingdom is and what it's like.
Well, Coins in the Kingdom is a Bitcoin conference that is being held here in Walt Disney World area. And essentially, it's all Bitcoins all the time. And,
right.
and the speakers have been wonderful. I've thoroughly enjoyed myself so far. I've seen lots of familiar faces, and I've met some new people and learned some new things. And yeah, I'm loving it. It's having a great time here. I'm not eating McDonald's, but I am loving it.
is Mickey there? Is Mickey using Bitcoin?
Oh, Mickey. You know, you said say hi to Mickey last night, and I didn't know what you were talking about.
Yeah.
So far, the costumed characters have not made an appearance. However, everyone here who's a guest speaker has been given sort of embroidered custom, like with their first name on the Mickey Mouse ears to wear around. So actually, everyone here at Coins in the Kingdom, at least on the speaker's side, and there are dozens of people here to speak, everyone is Mickey Mouse here at Coins in the Kingdom.
You know, one of the things I noticed about these hats is that they seem to have diminished in quality since I got my first one.
Oh, really?
At Disney World. Yeah, they're exactly the same.
Well,
so you would, I don't know, just what?
Nothing. I was going to make some child labor jokes, but I'm not going to because they're kind enough to have you there, and they also might be litigious. So, yeah, hats. People got some. So who's our
Mickey
first
hats.
Person? Do we got MK Lords there? She can talk?
We do. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass my resources
the speaking
over here
stick.
To Dobby.
You're going to pass
the speaking stick to Dobby and let him have a conversation here with MK.
All right.
So, Michael, just so you know, she won't be able to hear you.
Oh, I can give her headphones, Michael.
Oh, okay.
You're done with
That's
us.
True.
We'll,
okay.
We'll
yeah,
move
there you
things
go.
Along.
There you go.
Okay.
In our crippled studio.
Okay. So I'm going to pass my headphones over.
MK Lords, are you there? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the
yes.
government? Is this MK Ultra? I mean, MK Lords? Hello? Are you there?
Hold on, just a
we've decided that MK stands for Magic Kingdom.
I think it stands
new
for
adaptation in her branding.
Does it stand for bear madness also? I think my well, cat has bear madness. You'll probably hear him. He's yelling in the background. He has bear madness. Fuzzy. Did mommy go out? So Dobby, can you hear me? Can anyone hear
yes,
me?
I All can right. hear you fine.
What can MK hear us?
Yes, I can hear you just fine.
Hey, we finally get to talk. What's up, MK Lords?
Yes.
I want to.
Oh man, I'm having a great time. How cool. are you doing?
I'm stuck in Wyoming with bear madness.
He wishes he was here.
I do.
Right.
Yeah.
It's yeah. pretty magical.
Tell me about it.
We're having a bunch of really good speakers. Earlier today, we actually had a blockchain wedding. So people did their put their marriage vows on the blockchain. So that's really interesting. Basically, what we're trying to do with this conference is highlight the other uses of blockchain technology, because you hear a lot about the money aspect of it and the currency aspect of it and whether or not they're going to regulate it and stuff like that. And we kind of wanted to kind of look to the future and also kind of bring in people who are maybe new and do some like beginner workshops, stuff like that. So really educational, yeah. And we really wanted it to be accessible to people who don't know a lot about Bitcoin. Maybe they've heard of it, but they don't know the other potential uses for the technology.
Did you go to the wedding this morning? I overslept.
I caught the first part of it.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
So, like, how did they, like, is it, like, do you so-and-so take so-and-so, click, 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 password, confirm?
Yeah, basically. Well, they used an ATM. They used the coin outlet ATM. Basically. And Jeffrey Tucker was officiating.
I thought maybe the ATM was in the center. Like,
well, it was, yeah. It was like between them, and then Jeffrey Tucker was like on the stage, like cool. kind of a bum.
He's a good choice. I could see him as a good officiator.
Yeah, yeah, and it was really awesome because he gets really, you know, emotional at weddings. He was like kind of tearing up. It was just, it was really beautiful.
Awesome.
Do you know the technology of how they put that on the blockchain? First of all, did they put it on the Bitcoin blockchain or the Namecoin blockchain? Because I know Namecoin is set up to be able to put things in it, and Bitcoin might take a little extra work.
Well, you can send messages on the blockchain when you send a transaction. So I'm pretty sure this one was on the blockchain. They their wedding vows.
I don't think they go into the blockchain. I think they go in only on blockchain.info. I think they may need to look into this. I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe to put a message in the blockchain, you have to be a miner. And you have to put it in when you mine the coins.
I don't know. They may have figured that out.
I mean,
well, I've sent stuff. I mean, like I... Like I found, I got hacked earlier in the year, and I kind of made a little note to the hacked wallets, like from my blockchain account. It may only show up on blockchain.info, but you can. I don't know. I've sent stuff. You can send little things to, like, the Silk Road wallet too. When it was confiscated, you had all these very small transactions that were saying, like, you know, leave him alone, leave Ross alone, stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, do you know the where I could find the address that it was put to? I'd love to link it. So people could go check the wedding.
I can find that for you.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, for a later I'll talk to the bride and groom and get the exact addresses.
Excellent.
So other than weddings, what are we doing here with the blockchain?
Well, let's see. There was a really good talk this morning by Robert Anthony Peters. He was kind of tying it into economics and Scrooge McDuck. He used like a Scrooge McDuck theme for why Scrooge McDuck would like Bitcoin, you know, as opposed to the giant amounts of, you know, gold coins.
But he couldn't dive into the blockchain.
Right.
And swim
around. Yeah, well, that was one of the cons. That was
if it was a transhumanist Scrooge McDuck and he could like load himself into a Tron universe where Bitcoin could be made into a pool, then you could swim in it.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea for Disney. They need to reinvent. There they need to remix Scrooge McDuck.
Tron. The Tron chain. Yeah.
Crypto McDuck.
McDuck, exactly.
So, Davi, can you talk a little louder, Davi? And
Davi, I sure can.
Davi, can you give a quick explanation for those in Radio Land of, first of all, what Bitcoin is?
Sure.
Not
everyone knows yet. It's a peer-to-peer digital currency that it essentially means that everyone is using a common public ledger, and by participating in that, they no longer need a bank or any sort of financial institution to send units of currency directly to each other anywhere in the world. So by running this software and sort of you become the possessor of particular keys, which is what the coins are, you have an account, it sits in your wallet, and you have complete control over it, and you can delegate where those coins are sent to the next person in the ledger, which means that you have a global currency with no banking institution, which is sort of a unique event in human history. So nice. It's a little disruptive as a technology.
And you're at Coins in the Kingdom, which is a Bitcoin convention in Disney World, Orlando, right?
Well, we've been calling it a Bitcoin party. It's not quite a conference. It's sort of intended to be a little more fun, a little less stuffy, a little more liberty, a little less regulator than your average Bitcoin conference.
Yeah, we don't have any regulation panels at all for this one.
Yeah, we don't.
Is that a first? You've both been to a lot of Bitcoin events. Isn't there always a regulation?
Yeah. It's the first I've been to that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And nobody's even brought that up, huh? I think you should start bringing that up.
Not really.
Yeah. Like, hey,
bring
everyone.
Bring up that it's the first conference with everyone.
It's kind of like one of those implied things. Like, you can look at the other, you know, talks and see the, okay. see the okay. topics. And
so it's kind of like being to an outlaw. Kind of it's kind of like being to a fun party where there's no cops, and you don't have to point out to everyone there's no cops here. You're just like, yeah, there's no cops here.
Right,
yeah.
right. That's,
you know, yeah. I think that if we ever did abolish the police department, it would be sort of like that. Like, everything would go on as normal. People would get along perfectly fine. And every once in a while, someone would go, wait a minute, something's different about this town. Oh, there's no cops here. And there would be no other problem whatsoever.
I right. think you'd have reenactors. Like, you'd have, you know, like, actors.
There you go.
DEA
oh, yeah.
raids.
Yeah. yeah. Kent State reenactors.
Charlie Shrem's
we get together right oh, exactly
man. Yeah
and they would get their costumes together and they would like have a little paintball. It'd be just like Civil War reenactment.
Charlie Shrem's there, isn't he? But you know, you could ask him if he wants
no,
to do that.
No, he had to cancel actually.
If he did, he might say too soon, man. Not funny. What happened with Charlie Shrem?
Maybe it's too soon right now, but we're talking about a future where it's no longer too soon. So
I like
our
to
joke
live,
is time traveling. So
I like to live every day like it's libpair, like it's already a libertarian paradise. And that's kind of what you're doing there at Coins in the Kingdom in Orlando, aren't you? Aren't you having like, isn't that as if it was already, the government was already gone?
Well, it is. I mean, we're all, you know, this is Disney. It's all private property. The police outside are all employees of Disney. And the roads here are built by Disney, so it is. It
Who
is
would build the roads? Of. Disney. Yeah.
Disney built the roads.
That's not to say Disney is your perfect libertarian free market institution. They're pretty much propped up by intellectual property laws. But, you know, it's a little better. It's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, we were a bit worried about that when we were trying to figure out names for the rooms because I wanted them to be something cute. There's two main conference rooms. And it was like, I don't want to mess with Disney and name it like Disney characters. So I just went with the Fox and the Hound because that's kind of vague enough.
The Mouse Room. Yeah. All right, we'll be back on the Freedom Fiends. Live, embedded reporters, embedded partiers. At Coins in the Kingdom.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah!
This is Davi Barker from ShinyBadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at ShinyBadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Eagan, Minnesota, right?
Minneapolis, yeah, Eagan, yeah.
We're live.
Meow. Meow. Meow.
This is Mr. Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. And I am the board op here in the wilds and woolly bear country of Wyoming, and connecting to the board ops at the GCN studios there in, it's not Eagan, Minnesota. It's near there. It's a secret undisclosed location in Minnesota. Begins with a B. And so we have embedded, not embedded reporters, but embedded partiers in Orlando at Coins in the Kingdom. Diana, Fiend Diana.
Yes.
Are you there, Diana?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to introduce
I'm
the
here,
next
indeed.
The next Fiend for a day, Fiend for a moment there?
Okay. Well, our next guest, whom I met probably, I don't know, like 9 months ago or so, is Doug Scribner.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, Diana, you're really quiet and he's really loud. Can you guys split the difference on that? Please.
Okay.
All right. Diana closer on the mic and Doug further away, please.
Gotcha.
A little
okay,
closer
so,
now, Doug.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So, yeah. So, Doug.
Doug, who are you and why should we care? That's the question she's trying to ask. Who are you and why should we care?
I'm at the Coins in the Kingdom here, and I'm working on a new Bitcoin service, a platform, a video platform called Watch My Bit.
Ooh.
Now, it's a kind of a video paywall for Bitcoin, which is the short way that people can get it. But it's so much more than that, of course, and the possibilities are just endless. So basically, you know, you got your video up there, you got your cat video, you got your band meow. Video,
meow.
And on meow. YouTube,
meow.
If you got 10,000 views on YouTube, you would get between $50 to $100 in advertising, and that's if they watch the full darn ad. Most people skip those ads, so it's unknown, and it's not very much scratch, you know, for a struggling band or comedy troupe. But on this platform, if you choose to charge 21 cents to watch your band's video, you can make thousands of dollars. 21 cents at 10,000 views, you would get $1,500 passed on to you.
Oh, it adds up, man. Now, I mean, I literally make most of my living from what I call mailbox money, which is checks mm-hmm. from different things I've done in the past that vary from, you know, a big one is like $3,000 and a small one is like $30 or $15. And I just get checks like that all the time. And they add right. up. And, you know, over the past year or so, it's been a little bit less paper checks and a little bit more Bitcoin. Stuff adds up, man. And people should have many, many small income streams rather than one big income stream. It protects you more from right. everything.
So this is a huge income stream possibility, though. Yo, YouTube, you're going to get $50. If someone watches the video, every time they watch it, they get 21 cents. And part of that can go to charity. And part of that can be split to the keyboard player. And, you know, if the smallest part can go to the bass player.
I was just going
to
say, yeah, but, that guy, you know, doesn't get anything.
Exactly. Neither does the drummer, really. But, you know, so, and what happens is it becomes an organic crowdfunding source. So the band could say to their rabid fans, hey, watch this video, pay 21 cents, tell all your friends about this video, and then we can perform or, you know, get studio time for the next album way faster than trying to play at pay-to-play bars in L.A. or sell the CD and do all that kind of stuff. You know, that's just one example. It's the band thing.
What's the website?
WatchMyBit.com. So, you know, it could be Bitcoin-related, but maybe it's not.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a kind of a landing place right now. The vision is up there, and there's some numbers, actually, some crunch numbers if you scroll down the vision page of the kind of income you can receive. You know, the advertisers get the money on YouTube. YouTube doesn't pass it on to the artists, hardly any. So it's not really fair, really, in a way. You put your heart and soul into the sketch comedy. You put your heart and soul into that cat video, right? And then you're getting $50 to $100 for 10,000 views. 10,000 advertisers, you know, got to see and got placed. And you get nothing.
Where's the money come from?
The viewer. What happens is you search for a video on the platform. You find the band or the sketch or the cat video you want to watch, and the price is right there. And then a QR code pops up. Scan QR code, video starts. And that money goes right to the artist. So it's a video platform for art and soul.
When do you think...
And the soul part is the charity. Is the charity. Because every video you can give to a charity. So you might keep 90%, but you might want to send 10% to the charity of your choice. Now, that charity, they're going to want to tell everyone to watch your video also because they get the donation. So it's this virtuous circles where you're pumping the charity's pimping you.
Excellent. Well, Doug, I'm going to send people to go to watchmybit.com. And I make cat videos and music videos of my own
there you go.
Music.
Yay.
And put the trailer on YouTube and tell them to go to our place to see the full version.
Cool, man.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Thank you. The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Meow. Meow.
All right, this is the Freedom Fiends with live embedded partiers at Coins in the Kingdom. Yeah. Diana,
right.
Diana, you're there at Disney
yes.
World, Disney World Orlando.
Disney World Orlando.
What's going on there? Tell me the street eye, the worm's eye view of what's going on there.
Street eye view is I'm seeing a lot of people actually going into a panel that is starting, I think, about right now. and, you know, there's a lot of people here that are names, I guess you could say, in the Bitcoin community. And I heard MK and Davi talking about the marriage this morning. So yeah, that was pretty amazing to see the very first marriage on the blockchain.
I hope I didn't bum them out.
I was there to witness.
I hope I didn't bum them out by bringing up the possibility that may actually not be on the blockchain. It may be only on the website blockchain.info, but they can get back to me on that and let me know.
Oh, really?
Well, that's my understanding of it, is that the only way to actually put something on the Bitcoin blockchain is by putting it in when you mine it. Whereas Namecoin, you can put things, it's made to put notes and URLs in and IP addresses in the blockchain. But so who we got next? Who you got sitting right next to you there? And who is he and why should we care, as they say in the news?
Well, we have a partier here. His name is David Duccini. The Little Duke.
The Little Duke. I like it.
The Little Duke. And he has a very interesting item to talk about. It's a screensaver. And so, David, what more can you tell us about your screensaver?
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that. First-time listener, or long-time listener, first-time caller.
Yay!
So we've got a site called doabitofgood.com, and the value proposition is it links nonprofits and pro-social causes by uploading photo albums to the website, and then their donor supporters select their charitable organization or a given campaign, and then so while the screensaver is running, it shows the pictures of the nonprofit, and then it mines for cryptocurrency, which get donated back to the nonprofit.
Is there any particular cryptocurrency that it mines for, or can it mine for any type of cryptocurrency?
Yeah, so as of right now, we're just doing script-based currencies, alts. We're adding in X11 shortly.
Okay,
that's very cool.
The average listener to this radio show is a 72-year-old man driving his grandkids from church to the VFW picnic, and he's wearing a reindeer sweater. He's a great guy, but he has no idea what you're talking about. Let's go
Uncle
back.
Bob.
This is true.
Okay, Uncle Bob. For Uncle Bob, first of all, what is Bitcoin?
What is Bitcoin?
I'm serious.
This is the first time we're asking this question? Yeah.
No, I'm asking it every segment.
I appreciate that.
Because people listen to radio for 10 or 20 minutes at a time. So we're doing a live remote here from Coins in the Kingdom at Orlando, Florida, at Disney World. It's an event for Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a decentralized currency created for buying drugs. No, I'm kidding. It's a decentralized currency that basically reduces and eliminates the dependency on government oversight, regulation, and giant banksters who, you know, he who controls the money controls your soul kind of stuff. It's a good thing, and it's new. Mm-hmm. It's not that new, but it's probably new to a lot of people listening on radio, and if it's not, they know what we're talking about. But we're at a big party here. I'm not here. I'm back in the studio, but we got a party going on here in Orlando.
Spirit.
And there's people coming up with new things to do with this new currency. It's kind of like back in the .com era, in the late 90s, except there's less garbage and more real ideas. And we're talking to people who are doing some real ideas here. So tell us more about Do a Bit of Good, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So The core central idea is that we've got this distributed digital currency that is being generated. It has real economic value and can be converted. And we thought that it might be it might have a really good opportunity to do some good by linking in nonprofits and charities that are constantly struggling to generate funds, as well as, you know, kind of maintain mind share and relevancy. And so the core concept is, by using the screensaver, it's really a communication platform. A nonprofit, say an animal shelter, for instance, has adoptable pets. And so the best way, normally they just upload those pets to a website, whether it's Pet Finder or their own site. With our screensaver, we download pictures of those pets, and then while the pets are on screen, the system is working to solve the math problems behind the digital currencies like Bitcoin that then get donated back to that charitable cause. So we're helping to support them financially, but we're really helping their core mission, which is to find homes for adoptable pets.
Excellent. And that's so not, while, it's not so only, while, it's, go ahead, Diana.
I was just going to say, so while basically it's kind of doing everything at once, it's mining and donating at the same time.
Correct.
So it's actually mining the cryptocurrency, and then it somehow sends that currency to as a donation to a charity of your choice.
Correct. So the charity can either elect to cash the coins out if they want to, or we're working right now with the regulators to create a class of underwriters who could essentially bid or buy the coins at whatever price they want to set for them, and then pass the cash on. But that's not here today.
What's GiveCoin?
GiveCoin is is our internal scorekeeping coin. So it's one of the alternate currencies originally kicked off for cryptography or charity through cryptography. And that's it's our internal coin that we use for managing and monitoring transactions.
Excellent. Diana, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about regulation. So you said you're working with regulators. Can you kind of go into a little bit more detail about that?
Yeah, so anytime you've got a transfer from one sort of financial system to another, you are considered a money transmitter. And so our current proposition is that we work strictly with the coins, and the coins are basically collected, and the charity is free to to dispose of them as they see fit. And so we think that in order to bring this, to bring the economy forward, we need more participants. And part of that is creating an easier way for people to participate in the economy by making it more real. And so we think that right now, as you have with most nonprofits, they might have a silent auction where people can buy items. We want to bring that same silent auction into the cryptocurrency world, where people can come in and buy the coins directly at whatever price they want to set for those coins. And then the nonprofits get the cash.
Okay, yeah, that's awesome. I love all the great new ideas that people are coming up with using the blockchain technology, and it's just, I think the world's a limit with this. It's incredible. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Excellent. So interesting that it's using a screensaver. I haven't thought about screensavers in a long time. I guess I have one set up with Windows, it takes like an hour to go off. Is there a way? Some people like screensavers, some people don't. Is there a way to run this software without running a screensaver?
Yeah, not currently. So, you could, in theory, download some, a CPU miner if you wanted to do that, or if you were a hardcore, cryptocurrency miner, you could essentially send, mine for the address of the charity, on our site. But again, because we're very respectful of people's resources, if your power settings turn the screensaver off, our system shuts down.
So the screensaver is basically an indicator that it's mining at the time.
That's correct.
Yep. And if you're mining at the time, you can't do anything else with the computer, or you can?
Right. Yeah. So it's only linked to the screensaver. So when the screensaver is running, it's mining with our system anyway. And so when the screensaver, if you move the mouse, the mining shuts down.
And then does it instantly resume, or you can set the number of minutes that it takes to come back to mining?
Yeah, it's got the same control panel settings that you have in all the screensavers. So you can set the wipe delay. You can set the time for it to fire off.
Who did the programming on it?
So I have a couple of developers. I have a Mac OS developer and a Windows developer. So it's available on both platforms.
Nice.
So could I use this on my MacBook?
Absolutely. In fact, what you can do individually is you can actually individually upload your own photos to the site and get those to display, in which case then you'll just be generating credits that accrue on the system, and then you can go around and decide to spend them either as a named donation or an anonymous donation by picking a charity and just and allocating the coins.
Oh, that is awesome. Yeah.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Love that.
Are you having fun there at the event?
It's fantastic. It's really nice to. So I've been part of the mining or by the crypto community now since late 2010. And even though a lot of people say that, you know, most people don't get it, I've got an advanced degree in software engineering and an MBA, and so I actually got it the first time I saw it. And so I jumped in and started mining. And so it's really quite lovely to actually put a face to some of these big personalities.
What year did you start mining Bitcoin?
2010. Late 2010.
Are you a billionaire?
at one point, that might have been true, but I can tell you that I own probably the world's most expensive, you know, piece of silver.
What's that mean?
I converted some of the bitcoins to silver in the early days. So I got involved when they were $3 a piece.
Oh, wow.
So if you want to talk about some of the dumbest transactions,
okay,
yeah, I
let's
own
talk
some of the
about
most expensive
that. That's kind of interesting. And I don't think that indicates failure. I think that indicates success. I think it indicates, you know, that you actually used Bitcoin as currency rather than just magic baubles. How much, how many Bitcoin did you spend and how much silver did you buy?
So I don't know. I have to go back and look at my ledger, of course. But I think my you know, in retrospect, of course, my dumbest transaction was maybe blowing 200 coins on a $30 piece of silver. Maybe it was less. Maybe it was some ridiculous number. But yeah, I don't like to have that kind of, you know, that what do they call that, buyer's remorse.
Yeah, man. I think yeah. I think the story is
you're
worth
feeling
it.
That twinge right now, aren't you?
Just a little.
So you still have the silver?
I do have the silver.
And it was an ounce, and you spent 200 coins on it.
I don't remember if it was that. It was part of a bigger order, but yeah, I think that, you know, maybe it was 60 coins for I think the very first purchase. I could go back and verify. But
so I've heard so many roughly. Stories like that.
Hey, at least I didn't buy a pizza.
Hey, yeah, but but the pizza person has the better story because they were the first one. They spent 10,000 Bitcoin on a pizza. That's pretty cool.
That is pretty
cool. So how much would that the 20 bitcoins be worth now that you spend an ounce of silver?
6,000, I think, if you take a $300 valuation.
Yeah, that's not the worst investment ever. I mean, there's people – I know people that invested hundreds of thousands of dollars during the dot-com era in stock in companies that you could probably buy the web domain for $10 right now.
Speaking of buying Bitcoin and precious metals and that type of thing. For any of you listening that are interested in buying some Bitcoin, I would jump on that right now.
They're having a sale.
It was down to $298.
Yeah, they're having a sale.
It's BOGO. It's almost BOGO, right?
It's almost BOGO, yeah.
Buy one, get one. Yeah, I don't look at it as, I mean, there are people who are saying, it's the end of Bitcoin. I think I've seen 40 articles in the, you know, every 4 months there's an article about the end of Bitcoin. And I don't see it.
Haters
I mean,
gold, are going to hate.
That's
yeah,
right.
Gold and silver's down too. I just think it's the dollar's up a little bit artificially, and I just think it's all on sale, man. Bitcoin, gold, and silver are on sale. So,
yep.
Thanks a lot.
Invest.
Thanks a lot for coming on, and go to doabitofgood.com to see how the little Duke is going to help us out here. I dig it.
Right on.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
You've heard of shinybadges.com, but check out the new Causes tab. Every item includes a donation to a worthwhile Liberty project. Buy the Silk Road pin to contribute to the Ross Ulbricht Legal Defense Fund, or buy the Bitcoin Not Bombs t-shirt to contribute to Hoodie the Homeless 2014. Pick from many more. Go to causes.shinybadges.com and get yourself some quality Liberty products that not only start a conversation, but also put your money where your heart is. Plus, get a free gift when you pay with Bitcoin. causes.shinybadges.com.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Davi Barker, are you there? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
This is Davi Barker. I have not been contacted by the government. I'm here in Orlando, Florida at Coins in the Kingdom. And I'm here with Andreas Antonopoulos, who's a man of many titles and kind of a crypto savant, if you will.
Hi, everyone.
Hey.
So what project are you here for today?
Well, I'm attending this conference because I very much like the work that Jason King does through Sean's Outpost and many other charitable organizations. But he also tends to put on some very powerful conferences with great point of view and perspective. A lot of the Bitcoin conferences out there are pretty bland and not really bringing a point of view. And Jason does a great job with that. So that's why I'm here. I wanted to support his project and his conference. And yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Last minute addition, if I understand correctly. Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't know if I could get here on time. I had some other obligations, but I was able to arrange it. So, yeah, last minute addition. They graciously put me into one of the panels and gave me an opportunity to speak, and that was great.
Yeah. Michael, if you don't know, Andreas is you're the technical security officer of blockchain.info. Is that still your title?
No, that's not actually the case. I'm no longer working at Blockchain Info. I am an advisor to Blockchain Info as well as other companies in the space. Okay. So my primary occupation right now, I'm author of a book called Mastering Bitcoin, which is being published by O'Reilly Media. It's a book for developers to learn how to use cryptocurrency technology. And O'Reilly does a series of technical books which have animals on the covers called the Safari Series. And Bitcoin is going to be one of them.
Have you gotten any...
out November...
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
It's coming out November 25th, and it's been about a year's work, and I'm looking forward to it.
I write for O'Reilly also. Have you gotten any checks from them yet? The checks have animals on them, too.
Yes. They have a
lemur?
It's a lemur.
Yeah. I think it's a – yeah, it looks like – it's one of those little weird rodent monkey things with huge eyes. They're really cute.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've cashed some bunch of those checks over the days. They're pretty fun, man. They're the most fun checks I've ever gotten. I have a question about blockchain.info, a technical question maybe you could answer. So there was a wedding there earlier today, right?
Yes.
That was on the block – I was told it was on the blockchain. Now, I was under the understanding that putting notes into Bitcoin transactions only puts them on blockchain.info, not actually in the blockchain. Is that true?
Well, it's changed. So in the, and I'm talking like 2 years ago, the blockchain info application would use some transaction scripting language to embed messages directly into the blockchain. But that was changed. Because some of the developers, I think, were unhappy with the use of the blockchain as a store of data. And so instead, if you put a message using blockchain info or the API, it will only be stored in blockchain.info's database as metadata and is displayed on the blockchain info site. There are other ways to put data into the blockchain. So now there's an official transaction script mechanism called OP return, which is for putting data into the blockchain. You can only put 40 bytes. So it's useful for putting, say, a digital signature or fingerprint of something like a document.
Yeah, if they want to email me with it, I'll put it in a Namecoin transaction, which is made for that too.
Actually, that would be a really great application. I have some Namecoin too. That would be a great way to do it.
It's like having two witnesses.
Yeah. I was the guy. Exactly. I was working with Derek Slopey on MeowBit. I don't know if you remember that. It was a dot bit reader, resolver.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yep.
And unfortunately, I don't think it worked for the browser that I was using. I use a DNS proxy resolver to do .bit domains, which I've built into my
router. I think you're thinking of FreeSpeechMe, which was the first one I worked on that only worked for one browser. But Derek came up with one that worked for anything on Windows.
Oh, well, there's your problem. I haven't done Windows in 5 years, and I'm happy for that.
All right. The man likes other... What are your operating systems there?
I use Linux. I use Mac OS. I can't stand Windows.
All right. Do you want to stick around for another segment?
Sure. Absolutely.
Cool, man.
Worms.
Worms. Coins in the Kingdom. Yeah. Freedom Fiends. Live embedded partiers on the ground. Boots on the ground with microphones in Orlando. We'll be back with hour two of the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the free market. Worms.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Meow. Meow. Can Astro Calandreas mew for us?
Meow. Meow.
Coins in the Kingdom. Live remote. We don't have embedded reporters. We have embedded partiers from Orlando. Davi, take it, sir, on the Freedom Fiends.
So I'm still here with Andreas Antonopoulos, who's graciously joined us for our second segment. And I want to talk about your opening remarks, because I thought they were really spot on about the fake history, the whitewashed history of technology adoption.
Yeah. I talked a bit about how innovation and how innovators are treated, because we have this... all of this came to me when I was in Detroit. I was visiting the Maker Faire there, mm-hmm. and it was in the Ford Museum, and they presented this... kind of documentary. It was about a 15-minute documentary about the history of the automobile. And to summarize, it went like this. Cars invented. Ford and others hailed as heroes. World changed. Everybody was happy. Smile, smile, smile. And that's not actually what happened.
No.
What actually happened was cars were invented. The people who invented the cars were ridiculed in the press as insane people who were tinkering with these smelly, dangerous machines that blew up and killed people. And they were blasted in the media, and people considered these far inferior to the obvious advantages of a horse. There were no gas stations, there were no roads. These things would break down all the time. You couldn't get more than a couple of miles without getting stuck in the mud or in a rut or something like that. So the only people who did this were these mad, tinkering, millionaire rich people.
It's toys for the 1%.
This is toys for the 1%. And this was dangerous stuff, so... in England, they passed a law where it's called the Red Flag Act of 1896, where in order to operate one of these infernal machines, you had to have a pilot, an engineer, and a flagman. And the flagman would run ahead of the car, 100 yards ahead of the car, waving a red flag to warn pedestrians that this infernal machine was about to kill them. And then the media would write about these horrific car crashes and pedestrians mangled by these cars and really, really tried to destroy the industry. It took a good 20 or 30 years of this really negative perception before things changed.
You know, this really resonated with me because California still has its version of the Red Flag Act on the books.
Oh, yeah.
There's a law on the books in California. This is a blue letter law. It's not enforced or anything.
But the law is that if a horseless carriage or an automobile is traveling in the fog, there must be a man within 100 yards out in front of the vehicle with a lantern.
With a lantern.
And there were people who protested this when I was a teenager by going out on the highway carrying lanterns in the fog. And they all got arrested. But they're like, no, this law is on the books. Like, right. This really exists.
So is there a Bitcoin equivalent?
History.
Yeah.
Well, this is repeated history because the same thing happened with electricity. You know, we have this whitewashed history of, you know, Edison the hero invents electrical production and distribution and
kills an elephant.
America rejoices. And yeah, and so we forget about the killing of the elephant, but not just that. We forget the fact that the way the media treated electricity in the early days was as this weird experiment of mad scientists, and the people, the rich, who were electrifying their homes were these weird tinkerers who were putting electrified wires in the walls of their homes that would surely burn them down. And so then every time something happened, these horrible stories of electrocutions and houses burning down, that's what the media focused on. And it's only, you know, 20, 30 years later that you get the whitewashed history where all of that is forgotten. And instead, we see only the positive aspects of the technology and none of the naysayers and negative ninnies who were bashing the technology for decades. Suddenly they're all always in favor of it, and Edison was a hero. Well, he wasn't considered a hero at the time. He was considered a dangerous, crazy man. And now in Bitcoin, you know, the reaction of the media, it's all about drugs and terrorists and pedophiles and, you know, the iniquities of Bitcoin, which, by the way, mirrors the exact kind of media coverage you had for the internet. You know, we seem to forget that between 91 and 95, all of the media about the internet was about hucksters, thieves, pornographers, terrorists, and pedophiles. I mean, essentially, the internet was a den of thieves. And only later did people suddenly realize that this could be a mainstream tool and that most people would use it for good, and the good far outweighed the bad. And suddenly everybody's, you know, all for it. Now you don't hear these stories. But that was part of our history. And it's important to remember that. It's important to remember that innovators are not greeted with open arms by the public. They're treated as dangerous, crazy people who must be suppressed.
And I mean, also the sort of Luddites or the like late adopters, they're like a historical sort of vendette. They're a percentage of the population who are like designated Luddites. Anytime anything innovative happens, they reject it until it's proven by, you know, a majority or whatever. Until PayPal says it's okay, you know.
And some of them don't. They still reject it, and then they move to Montana and live in the woods without electricity because it's an infernal thing in the walls of the houses and will cause them to burn down.
Yeah.
You know, some people are holdouts. They never will change, right? And you have Luddites of the internet as well. And we'll have Luddites in Bitcoin. At the moment, they're the majority, but things will change.
Yeah.
I actually live in Wyoming, which is a little more rural than Montana. And we're having this influx of last adopters of getting high-speed internet to the point where the local cable company is way overselling before adding the capacity, to the point where I had to actually go and get a DSL connection in addition to my cable connection recently to be able to do this show solidly. Had to go back in time.
Well, in that case, I won't upset you by talking about the fact that I have gig internet at home.
Cool. I had DSL in 96.
There you
That's
go.
That's pretty awesome.
Well, I'm not doing one-upmanship. I happen to live in one of the four cities in America that had it in 96, and I happen to live within 1,000 feet of a phone company, which you had to have
right,
DSL
it's not a choice,
in 96.
It's a locality.
Well, it is a choice. Yeah. I had dial-up, and I paid money I didn't have at the time to get DSL, and really, I loved it.
Yeah, I love the gig internet at the moment.
What
I
city
if there were
is it? Austin
of people to move closer to the phone company.
I can't say that.
Okay, I understand. Yeah, yep.
So well, Groovy, tell me more about your book.
Yeah,
like what's the pitch? What's the elevator pitch?
So simply speaking, it's a book for developers, for software engineers. It's a technical book about the internals of, yes, it explains exactly how Bitcoin works. Every component of Bitcoin from, you know, the transactions, the scripting language, wallets, keys, addresses, public key, elliptic curve, down to esoteric components like Bloom filters and Merkle trees that operate on the inside, the consensus mechanism, mining, and the blockchain. But the first couple of chapters are accessible to everyone. They can be read by people who are not technical, and they provide a very in-depth understanding of how Bitcoin actually works. And the whole book is illustrated with stories of regular people and how they use Bitcoin in specific examples. So practical stories. Well, I tried writing it without the people, and it turns out the technology is really boring unless you attach it to people.
People, good.
So then I had to start again. But so it's also available under an open source license, which is one of the things I agreed with O'Reilly in my proposal from the very beginning. I wanted this to be open source so that it's been collaboratively edited with community interaction from the beginning on GitHub, and people can take the book and reuse it and read it for free. But it's also out as an ebook and as a print book.
That's an exciting process. So you had, by consensus editing, you mean like you opened it up to people before it was published?
Yes,
and you let them give you feedback, or is it like editable like Wikipedia?
Well, no, people did pull requests and commits against the GitHub repository. It's a version control system.
Okay.
But essentially, yes, almost like Wikipedia. I individually approved specific changes, although I had a GitHub editor, Ming Nguyen, who helped tremendously by managing the hundreds and hundreds of submissions. You know, Ward Cunningham, who invented the wiki concept, said something fantastic, which is, if you want to get the right answer about something on the internet, don't pose a question. Instead, post the wrong answer and have the internet smugly correct you. And that was the birth of the concept of Wikipedia, which is just awesome. Post whatever, and then someone's going to come along and go, that's
smugly
not it.
Correct what? You.
Right, exactly. So what I did is I posted the book and then had people come back and smugly corrected me, and I accepted that with a smile, and the book got much, much better because now it's been seen and read and corrected by so many people. You can't get all the details right. No single person could do that.
That's been my approach with Survivor Max, because I don't know as much about firearms as a lot of my friends. I don't know as much about prepping as a lot of my friends. So I write the chapter, rough draft. I post it on Facebook. Right. And then people come in and they say, well, actually, you know, that Jeep wouldn't roll that way in neutral. You need to use this Jeep. And I'm like, okay, I'll change the model. And then I know that the Jeep in the book is the right one for that stunt, you know?
Yeah, it's the ethos of the internet. And it works beautifully because so many people invested incredible amounts of time, and not just smugly correcting me, of course. A lot of them were amazing contributions.
It's free labor.
But down to every last little syntax and grammar and spelling correction. Yeah. People went in there and were willing, as they were reading it, they found something. Oh, well, make a quick correction, submit it as a pull request, and made the book better. And better and better and better. And that process went on for 6 months now and has resulted in a very quick edit from my publisher because it was essentially pre-edited.
That's exciting. I'm very interested in this idea of like consensus book writing. I've got a number of stories that I've been working with a team of people to produce as opposed to myself writing one story by myself.
Because then...
Yeah, I don't know about consensus book writing because, I mean, keep in mind, I still wrote 99.8% of it, right? The problem is, unless you have someone firmly in charge of the narrative and the story, the hardest part of this is figuring out what is the narrative that ties all of these technical concepts together.
Well, in my case, what I've done is I've created a setting, and I've created a villain, and I've created a cast of background characters, and then I've given each of the main characters to four of my friends.
Oh, that's brilliant. I think that can work very well, as long as you maintain kind of some control over the overall narrative and bring it back together.
Right.
So, Andreas, is the book kind of an API for Bitcoin for programmers?
It does contain information about the APIs. It looks at the various commands. But a lot of the internals, the data structures, how things work together, how they're structured, all of the technical concepts from what an address is and how it's built. And with code examples in Python and C++ showing how to implement some of the most common functions as little recipes, code snippets in the book.
Does it get esoteric at all? Like, do you try to explain the math of like the soul of Bitcoin?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it does get very esoteric.
Cool.
There's, you know, both in terms of understanding the process of blockchain consensus, the consensus mechanism of mining and how forks work and all of that, but also, you know, the math of the cryptography and the elliptic curve mathematics that are used in Bitcoin's private public key and address system.
So this sounds like something like I might want to read, because the idea of the human element sounds really appealing. The first two chapters really appealing. Does it sound like maybe I would skip over the esoteric and cryptography stuff? Or like, is it available to everyone? You think it'd be enjoyable by everyone?
I think you can you would gain a lot from all of it because you get a much deeper understanding of Bitcoin. You could just skip over the parts that are not interesting to you because they're too technical.
Okay. I'm going to have to do that, I think.
I'd be happy to send you a copy.
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends.
Yeah, we're on a break.
And yes,
thank you
we're
for that.
Broadcasting
appreciate
this into
it.
Space.
Hey, this is Squisklar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends broadcasting from a... I'm in a windowless bunker in Wyoming, but Davi Barker and Diana Kyler are there in the kingdom, in the magic kingdom.
We're in
kingdom.
A windowless hotel lobby.
You're in the happiest Bitcoin location on earth. So tell me about it. Who are you? Why should we care? And who's sitting next to you?
This is still Davi Barker, and I'm still here with Andreas Antonopoulos, who's sticking around for another segment. We're just sort of here, shooting the breeze, having a good time.
So Davi, for
magic money.
So Davi, Andreas, for the listener, the talk radio listener, who's the 72-year-old grandpa driving his kids from church to the VFW picnic wearing a reindeer sweater, he's a good guy, but he's maybe hearing about Bitcoin for the first time today. What can you tell that guy about Bitcoin that he should know? Other than not be terrified by it, it's not the devil machine that's going to electrocute you.
Well, Bitcoin is money by people for people. It's very much like Skype changed the phone system and allowed people to call people directly on their laptop. I like to remind people that central banks and bankers brought you the Great Depression, and nerds brought you the internet. So now we've brought you internet money. And what that money does is it behaves like an internet application. It doesn't care about borders. It doesn't care about who the source or destination is. It's completely neutral, and it empowers individuals. And that's a pretty amazing thing, because we live in a world where close to 6 billion people have very, very limited access to banking or no banking at all because of politics, because of geography, because of economic inclusion and opportunity problems. And so Bitcoin, I think, is very interesting because the technology behind it makes it possible to have private money that individuals can use directly and that can go anywhere in the world in a matter of seconds. It's fast, it's cheap, it's secure. It's everything you love about the internet now in money.
Nice. So if someone listening does not love Obama and doesn't like how he's trying to get into their pockets and all aspects of their life, will Bitcoin help them avoid Obama?
Well, you know, the executive has become an all-powerful consuming machine that is gradually gobbling up all parts of government and power. And it has a very, very cozy relationship with the very large banks and corporations and the defense industry and all of that. And that's a very dangerous state of affairs. Every time that's happened in history, bad things happen. Of course, certainly it's not Obama who started it, and he's not the first president who did that, and he's not going to be the last one. As far as I'm concerned, nowadays, you have a very simple choice. You can vote for the blue corporate statist fascist warmongers, or you can vote for the red corporate statist fascist warmongers. And so why bother?
He still thinks he's not a libertarian.
Yeah. Why do you think you're not a libertarian? I want to hear that one. You sound like, I've heard like 2 hour long speeches by you, and I'm like, wow, this guy explains libertarianism well. Am I just projecting?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I believe that there is some role for government, for constitutional principles and protections. I think that the market doesn't fix everything, and I think that minorities and the disadvantaged people do need protection from a majority that will swallow them. But, you know, it's really difficult to define an entire political philosophy and worldview, especially if it's nuanced and sophisticated, with a single word. So right. I really don't like putting a label on anything. I'm not a libertarian because I'm not any kind of Ian or ism believer.
Yeah.
You're not an Ian? I'm not an Ian.
No, anything that ends in Ian or ism.
He doesn't mean Ian Freeman. He's like Christian.
I'm making a joke about Ian Freeman.
Yeah, no, I'm a disruptarian.
I
believe that all established systems eventually become corrupted by those who establish them and serve only their purposes. So the only thing that really matters is change and disruption. And I believe in disrupting the system from within every few decades just to bring something fresh to the game.
Okay, really quick, 1 minute. Why is Bitcoin resistant to corruption?
Well, it's not resistant to corruption as an absolute value. It's just more resistant to corruption than centralized institutions. Centralized and hierarchical institutions, which were the only answer we had to the secure distribution of money until now, until Satoshi Nakamoto's invention, which allowed us to do it in a decentralized way. Every time they're built, centralized and hierarchical institutions get co-opted by the people who achieve power in the center, and then they convert those systems into serving their own needs. And so you either disrupt them or you decentralize them, or preferably both.
Excellent. Thanks for worms. Coming on, man. Worms. Can we get a worms?
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir.
Hope to come back to your show one day.
Excellent. Anytime.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Michael Dean, Freedom Fiends. We got Diana Kyler from Coins in the Kingdom in Orlando, Florida, at beautiful, sunny downtown Disney World. Are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Cool. What you got there
now,
for us?
I'm here now. I have a gentleman by the name of Sam Patterson, and he is one of the representatives here. He's got a booth for the Open Bazaar. And so, Sam...
Yes.
I would like to ask you who you are and why should we care?
So the reason you should care is because I represent the Open Bazaar Project, and what it's going to do is really allow for free trade online. It's a peer-to-peer platform where people can get on with no fees, no middlemen, no censorship, and buy and sell whatever they like.
So it's like Silk Road for legal things?
Yeah, I mean, so Silk Road was a centralized service. It was actually a website that you visited. Now, it was through Tor, so it was supposedly anonymous. But we do not have a centralized service. We don't offer any products or anything ourselves. All we're doing is creating the code for people to get on a network, sort of like Bitcoin itself or BitTorrent, and buy and sell stuff directly with other people in that network.
Sounds good. What platforms is it available for, and is it available yet?
So it is. We started this back in April. We actually forked from an earlier project doing something similar, and we've been developing it ever since. So we launched our first beta at the end of August, and that's really available for users who are familiar with things like Linux or use a Mac. So Windows users have to wait. We just did the beta 2 at the end of last month, And we're continually doing beta releases every month until we get to the point where we think it's worthy of being called a full release, so that it's very easy for anyone to come download it simply, install it quickly, and get up and running without any difficulty.
So the beta is available for a Mac now, so I could run that on my MacBook?
You absolutely could. And okay. We put together tutorials, blog posts for folks to get on and install it. And you have to have a little bit of technical knowledge, but nothing too extreme.
Okay. Well, I don't need to actually have technical knowledge myself. I have a boyfriend that has that.
That's all you need.
You have a live-in IT man.
Exactly.
Yep. Can we get Sam a little closer on the mic?
Even if I need help with my iPhone.
Can we get Sam a little closer on the mic? He's not nearly as loud as you are.
Okay.
Sure.
Cool. So how did you get into Bitcoin, and how did you get into technology in general?
So I'm sort of I'm a libertarian, and I had a lot of my libertarian friends a couple years ago. This is probably middle of 2011. Keep telling me about Bitcoin and how powerful it could be, and I ignored them for quite some time until I had a friend I really respected who also said, "Look, you really need to read the details of how this works." This is probably middle of 2012, and so I finally did, and at that point, it sort of clicked. This is a story many people have told. And I sort of went down the rabbit hole, started reading more and more about it. I realized that there wasn't a central good source of information that was for a layman. And so after getting into this and starting to buy Bitcoin, this is early 2013, I wrote one of the first guides to using Bitcoin, actually an ebook that's on Amazon. And it became one of the best-selling guides to using Bitcoin for a while. And so that was really exciting. I got to go to conferences and talk about it, introductory Bitcoin stuff. But I was looking for my next book to write, and I saw the idea of decentralized markets as a really powerful way to be able to unite people around the world in commerce, which is, of course, peaceful and helps everyone. And the idea of decentralized markets were powerful, so I reached out to the guy who just forked this new product called Open Bazaar to do an interview with him so that I could write my next book on the subject. And the idea was so compelling, and he was so passionate about what he was doing, that I decided to, instead of just write a book about it, join the project and help him make it a reality.
Nice.
So you wrote the book, the first book on Bitcoin.
That's right.
In 2013, so last year.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's not the first book on Bitcoin, but it was one of the first ebooks on Amazon on the subject of Bitcoin.
Right.
And I don't even tell people. I don't recommend people go buy it anymore because
right.
it's already outdated.
Right.
That's
right.
How quick the space has moved. Yeah. A year and a half ago, it's already outdated.
Yeah. What's the title of the book?
It's called Bitcoin Beginners.
Oh, okay.
If you go on Amazon and you search on their Kindle listings for Bitcoin, it should be, you should be able to find it. But again, I don't even recommend people buy it.
Yeah.
It's already outdated.
It's obsolete.
I do tech writing also, and also do literature. And tech writing is definitely not literature. A friend of mine who's also a tech writer, one of the Dummy series guys, described it as chalk on the sidewalk waiting for the rain.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, that's exactly what has happened in this case. And people say, "Well, just put out a new release," and I did. I did put out an updated version a few months later. And unless I want to put out an updated version every 3 months or so, it's just it doesn't work. I mean, space has changed so quickly.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you call that, a Sisyphus kind of thing?
That's right. That's
pushing that rock up the hill.
It keeps rolling back down.
Yeah.
But that's certainly not a bad thing. I mean, it's a lot more exciting to be involved in something like this than to be involved in the policy world, where things either move very, very, very slowly and they stagnate innovation, or when they do move, they usually move in the wrong direction. So I'd much rather be in the tech world.
Yeah, yeah. It's either people meeting over years trying to regulate technology that changes by the time they write the first draft of the bill, or it's a SWAT team kicking in a door because they don't understand what's on the other side of the door, or they do and they're afraid of it, rightfully, when they don't need to be. But that's just kind of what they do. So what do you like about Bitcoin for people who are new to the concept? And we're on radio, so there are those people listening.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's pros and cons. Like, I'm not going to say that it's the easiest thing in the world to wrap your head around, or, it's gotten to the point where it's very, simple to purchase Bitcoin, although that is becoming with things like Circle and stuff. But what I would say for users is the power to control your own money is really something that just
excellent.
You cannot compare to Bitcoin. There's nothing else out there that lets you control your own money like Bitcoin.
Excellent. And that's thank you, Sam Patterson, for coming on. That's Sam Patterson from Open Bazaar. And we got about 6 minutes left here. We're going to get Tatiana on. Is Tatiana there?
Actually, Adela. We're Adela. Getting Adela okay. on. Excellent. Yes.
Pop the headphones
on. Thanks so much, Sam. Yeah, really appreciate it.
Can you turn the channel up that the guest is on, Diana? On the mixer?
Okay, let me see. I don't...
Well, get the headphones on, Tatiana.
I don't want to break something. I could very well break something.
Get the headphones on, Tatiana, and okay. I'll walk you through it.
Tatiana, are you there, Tatiana? Get very close to the microphone. I'm so sorry, Adela. Adela.
Okay. We got Adela.
Hi, Adela.
Okay, she's really quiet.
Get very close to the microphone. Get right up on it.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah, that works. Diana, you could back off the mic a little bit since we don't have since our engineer is on strike.
That's fine.
You know, he's not getting pizza.
I'll stop being
Okay, so Adela, is that your name, Adela?
Yes.
What's your website?
Oh, so my website is www.adel.la. It's unfortunately it's still a work in progress, but there should be some contact information.
.com there. .org dot what?
.com.
Okay.
Sorry. adel.la. So it's a dot la.
Okay. And tell us about your project.
So I'm concerned with Bitcoin and what it could do for people in developing countries. And I'm partnering up with a number of startups and individuals to create projects and to help sort of ease them into the space.
I really want to hear a little bit about your talk that you gave yesterday, how Bitcoin is better than sex. explain to us how Bitcoin is better than sex.
It's a really hard sell.
Yeah.
it's a really hard sell. But, you know, I think... When we think about these issues, we usually think of us, and we're very much the minority. There are 6 billion of them, in quotes, out there. And I'm talking about the 6 billion when I say Bitcoin is better than sex. Because what it does is that it allows 6 billion people to take part in a global economy that they have never had a chance to be a part of. This is very new. We've never seen anything like this. And what that does is it introduces prosperity, new opportunities. And what does that do? That leads to smaller family sizes, different decisions. So that's where I was going with that.
Right. So smaller family sizes, different decisions.
Correct.
And really more, you know, more leisure time, probably. Yeah. So the more... you know, the more economically sound a family is, you know, or, you know, a parent is, or a husband or a wife, then, you know, they have more time for extracurriculars.
Absolutely. When you're not thinking about food or water or the basic needs, you're thinking about other things. Your priorities become different. Your decisions are different. So, you know, I think it's worth thinking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you're having a good time here.
Fabulous time. It's amazing.
And so you've seen a lot of familiar faces from other conferences that you've been to.
I have.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite things about coming to these things. It's like seeing family again, like a family reunion.
Right.
In a way, definitely. And so you live in the D.C. area.
I do. I mm-hmm. live in Alexandria, just 10 minutes out of D.C.
Mm-hmm. And so tell us a little bit about the type of law that you practice. And does it have anything to do with cryptocurrencies or Bitcoin at all?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It does. So I work with a number of startups, primarily startups, because we're talking about Bitcoin here. Mm-hmm. You know, hasn't been around for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And I'm just helping them with doing some consulting. I do international work as well. Mm-hmm. I work in tandem with people in Europe and in the Caribbean and some in South America. So
yeah, I guess give a little more detail about how, you know, what types of services that you're actually providing.
Right. So basic financial services, you want to set up a business. You don't want to set it up in America. Oh, you don't. Oh, we're
okay.
What is your structure like? What kind of structure would you like to have? What kind of tax structures are you looking to set up? So I try to find a good fit for people looking for manageable structures.
Okay. And so not necessarily, so say somebody is living in the U.S. and they want to, you know, they have, you know, a fairly substantial amount of money would like to manage elsewhere. So that's what you would like, you could set people up with doing those types of things?
Something like that.
Like with
yes.
funds, like funds, you know, international funds and that type of thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, setting up IBCs, international business corporations in the Caribbean, you get a good tax blanket.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know.
That's awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much, Adela.
Oh,
really appreciate having you on. And say worms.
Worms.
Just say worms.
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 You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Yeah. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com.
Freedom Fiends. So we're back
Freedom
at our
Fiends.
Final segment of Coins in the Kingdom here, and Diana is gonna, we're down to one microphone. They've been the microphones have been taken away by the government, so we're gonna be handing one microphone back and forth like a reporter in the field there. Diana, are you there? Are you safe?
I am here and I'm safe. The drones have thankfully flown away.
All right, who's your next and final guest?
My next and final guest is the infamous Christian Saucier, otherwise known as Pablo Matisse.
Okay, what happened to Tatiana?
Worms.
What happened to Tatiana, Christian? Is she safe?
Tatiana is safe, but Tatiana was talking on a panel that was supposed to end at a quarter to the hour, and it is not ended yet, so you're stuck with me.
I'm not stuck with you. I like you. I'm really glad you got on here. So, Christian Saucier, the Liberty Cook, what are you cooking? What's
the
cooking?
The Liberty Cook. Well, I got a lot of stuff cooking. I think last time I was on your show, we talked about how I wanted to do something in a Bitcoin space. And I have now, imagine this, told my employer. I had a great job that paid good money. And I told my employer, you know what? I'm leaving. And I'm going to go work on something that I don't know when it's going to make me money.
Wow.
But I'm going to be a lot happier doing it. So it's very scary, but it's also very exciting.
A lot more people used to do that. It seems like now, since I blame the government, because it seems like all over the world, government regulations make it so hard to start your own business that most people go, oh, I'll just work for someone else. But Bitcoin makes that easier, doesn't it?
It totally does. That's exactly what I'm doing. I don't even know if I'm going to incorporate a business. I'm just going to work for Bitcoin. I'm looking for customers that, you know, want to spend Bitcoins, and I want to get Bitcoins. So I'm going to Bitcoin's conference like this one and just networking with people. And you know what? It's easier than I thought. I thought it was going to be really hard. And I come here, and now I've got too many ideas walking out. I'm going to have to choose between too many things that need to be done with the people that I'm meeting here at a conference.
Can you tell us some of the ideas, or are they secret?
Oh, there's no secret for the fiends.
Go ahead.
One of the ideas that I'm working on is a decentralized wiki. So it allows you to, you know how, you know, there's Wikipedia, right? That's a good wiki where everybody goes and checks, you know, definitions and whatnot. There's also WikiLeaks. That's a bad wiki. It's actually a good wiki too. But I want to build a wiki engine that allows people to post something online that will actually be uncensorable. You will not be able to remove it because it's going to be decentralized. It's not going to be hosted on a server. It's going to be hosted on tens of thousands of computers around the world.
What kind of addressing space are you going to use for that?
Well, you know, I'm very happy that we have Meowbit, because it's going to have, you know, a Meowbit component to it.
Are you using Namecoin? You're using Namecoin for it, .bit?
Oh, definitely. I, you know, on my business card that I'm using here, I have a QR code in the back. That's the square with all the, you know, little squigglies on it.
Yeah.
And that QR code, if you scan it, it sends the person scanning it to my name ID that's recorded on the Namecoin blockchain.
Ah.
So that essentially, Namecoin is my business card.
So so you'll be using Namecoin without people having to know they're using Namecoin.
Yeah, and that's the challenge, right? It's always difficult, but the idea is to make the technology transparent to the user so the user does not have to learn about Bitcoin and blockchains and all these technical terms. All people are going to see is, I mean, just like a wiki, right? It's going to be a nice screen where you can enter an article, and when you post it, it's posted forever.
Yeah, sometimes the Namecoin developers get upset when people do things with Namecoin without asking them, but... you know, it's open source. It's GNU licensed. I say just do it, or ask them. You might ask them. You might tell them what you're doing.
My stuff is going to be open source too. And you know what? I'm not going to be upset if you go do something different, or even do something that competes with mine. I mean, the whole point of open source is to get, you know, a concept, an idea, a program out there that people are going to use. And if you start complaining when people use it for different purposes, then you're not getting it.
Well, it just makes everything better. The competition and all of that, you know, everybody using everybody else's stuff, it just makes stuff better.
Excellent. I really look forward to seeing what you come up with, Christian. And thank you, Diana, for being the boots on the street there at the happiest Bitcoin place on earth, the Magic
Absolutely.
Kingdom. Coins in the Kingdom. We'll be linking everybody who spoke. What's your website, Christian? Do you have one yet, or is it too advanced for that?
It is too advanced for that. I'm not even there yet. It's brand new.
Okay.
Worms.
Thank you guys for bringing us some interesting on the boots, on the ground reporting there from the streets of the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, it's been fun.
It's been really fun. Thank you for your service.
Absolutely.
Worms. Tell Ian thank you for us, please.